Time to have a go at some examples to see what you've learnt so far.
In the first column, you will see a list of 10 types of disposal. The last three columns are headed up full rate, lower rate, and exempt. Look at the type of disposal that comes up on the screen and decide whether it is a normal taxable disposal and therefore liable to landfill tax at the full rate, whether it is a disposal of qualifying material and therefore liable to the lower rate, or whether the disposal is exempt by virtue of the legislation and therefore is not liable to landfill tax at all.
The types of disposals from 1 to 10 are now appearing on your screen. Look closely at each of them, and once you've decided which of the columns they fit into, insert a capital Y into the correct column. Once you are happy with all of your choices, then press Enter and the results will be shown. The types of disposal are 1. Material dredged from a canal, 2. Soil containing a small amount of grass, 3. Domestic pets at a pet cemetery, 4. Household waste, 5. Building site waste, 6. Foundry sand, 7. Clear glass bottles, 8. Glass reinforced plastic, 9. Fly ash from clinical waste incineration, and number 10, naturally occurring material from mining. If you open up the Finance Act 1996 and the qualifying material statutory instrument, then the answers should not be too difficult to find. So how did you do? The correct answers have now appeared on your screen. Material dredged from a canal is exempt by virtue of section 43 of the Finance Act 1996. Soil containing a small amount of grass would fall within group 1 of the qualifying material order of 1996. A disposal of domestic pets at a pet cemetery is specifically exempt by virtue of section 45 of the Finance Act 1996.
Household waste and building site waste, if none of it has been sorted into qualifying material, will be liable to tax at the normal rate. Foundry sand is liable to the lower rate. It falls within group 3 by virtue of extra statutory concession notice 48. Clear glass bottles fall within group 2 of the qualifying material order and therefore are liable to the lower rate. Glass reinforced plastic, however, is excluded from the definition in group 2 by virtue of note 3 and therefore is liable to the full rate. Fly ash from clinical waste incineration is specifically excluded from group 5 of the qualifying material order and therefore is liable to the full rate. Finally, naturally occurring material from mining is specifically exempt under section 44 of the Finance Act 1996.
We have already mentioned that landfill tax is charged per ton of weight of waste. But how is the weight determined? Regulation 41 onwards of the landfill tax regulations prescribes how the weight must be determined. There are three methods listed in the legislation: the basic method, the specified method, and the agreed method. The basic method applies unless a specified or agreed method is used. The basic method is to weigh the material at the time of disposal, i.e., at the landfill site itself. The material is weighed on a weighbridge.
The specified method is contained in Regulation 43, paragraph 1, and this says that weight is determined by a public notice.
The relevant notice is Landfill Tax 1, and this provides that where a specified method is used, it must be used for a continuous 12-month period, and the person must use the method consistently, i.e., use the same method for the same types of waste or for the same type of custom. Currently, the notice prescribes three specified methods. None of them require prior approval from customs to use. Method 1 is the maximum weight of container method. This involves recording the maximum weight that the lorry, for instance, is permitted to carry. That permitted weight is then used and applied to the rate of landfill tax. What this means is that if you only have half a load in your lorry, you will overpay, because the tax will still be based on a full load. Method 2 is a volume-to-weight conversion method. This involves finding the cubic capacity of the vehicle carrying the waste, and then, depending on the waste that is being carried, conversion factors are used to calculate the weight of the material.
All of this information is available in the public notice.
The final method is Method 3, which allows weighing of waste prior to disposal at the landfill site. If, for example, the landfill site does not have a weighbridge, then the person disposing of the waste can weigh it before they leave their own premises. an accurate audit trail will need to be kept for customs purposes. The final method is the agreed method. Where this applies, the basic and specified methods will not, and customs will agree a method for a 12-month period. The agreed method is an agreement with a registered person, i.e. the landfill site operator, that weight will be determined in a different way other than the basic or specified methods. This might be used if, for example, using the weighbridge would be costly. For example, waste does not normally pass near the weighbridge, or if perhaps the weighbridge has broken down. We have already said that the landfill site operator is liable to pay the tax. In order to do this, they must register with customs in accordance with Section 47 of the Finance Act 1996 and also comply with the rules in the Landfill Tax Regulations, Statutory Instrument 1527 of 1996. Section 47 requires a landfill site operator who carries out taxable activities to register. The time limit for registration is based on when they form the intention to carry out taxable activities. They must notify customs on landfill tax forms, and these are called LT1 and LT1A. LT1 is the application for registration, and LT1A provides information to customs about the actual landfill site. Regulation 4, paragraph 4 of the Landfill Tax Regulations says that you need to tell customs within 30 days of having formed the intention. Therefore, unlike VAT, there is no threshold. In addition, if you cease to operate a landfill site, you also have to tell customs. This must be done within 30 days of ceasing. The notice given to customs must include the date that you ceased to have the intention and the date on which you ceased to carry out taxable activities. If your particulars change in any way, you also have to tell customs. You must also do this within 30 days of the change occurring. The types of change that customs need to know about are if the name or trading name or address at the landfill site that is operated changes, if the landfill site operator changes his status, for example, he goes from being a sole proprietor and forms a limited company, or if he operates as a partnership, if the name or address of any partner changes, then this must be notified as well. What if we sell our landfill site to somebody else? If this happens, under normal circumstances, the person disposing of the site would need to deregister for landfill tax purposes, and the person buying the site would need to register. However, if both parties agree, then they can apply for the registration number of the seller to be transferred to the purchaser. In order for this to happen, Regulation 7 of our Landfill Tax Regulations needs to be satisfied. The conditions are as follows. The business must be transferred as a going concern. The registration number of the seller must still be active. As a result of the sale, the seller's registration would otherwise be cancelled and the purchaser would become liable to register. And both parties sign the form LT68. Customs will then pass the seller's registration number to the purchaser at the date of the sale of the business. And as a result of this, like with VAT and many other indirect taxes, the purchaser will take over the seller's history with respect to landfill tax. Therefore, if the seller has been accounting for landfill tax incorrectly, then customs may assess this on the purchaser. Before we come on to record keeping and accounts, a couple of special circumstances that you need to be aware of. Firstly, some rules regarding unincorporated bodies. If an unincorporated body, other than a partnership, operates a landfill site, responsibility for complying with the legislation lies with the president or chairman, treasurer or secretary, on a joint and several liability basis. If there aren't any of these positions, then the joint and several liability will be imposed on any committee, and if there is no committee, then every member of this unincorporated association will be jointly and severally liable. Notification of registration, change in particulars, or cessation, etc., can only be validly given by one of the people who has been obligated under the above provision. So, if there is a president, then a member of the organisation cannot validly make the notification. If the unincorporated body is a partnership, the normal partnership rules apply, and that is that every partner is jointly and severally liable for compliance with the law. Our final look at special circumstances before we come on to record keeping is the situation where an operator becomes bankrupt, or if he is running a company, the company goes into liquidation. If a registered person becomes bankrupt, or the company he runs goes into liquidation or receivership, then customs may treat any person who carried on that landfill site as a registerable person. This could include, for example, a liquidator, where a company has gone into liquidation. This person will therefore be liable under legislation for complying with payments, sending returns, and other requirements under the regulations. If someone else comes and buys the business, they must tell customs within 30 days of taking over the landfill site. The liability of the liquidator will come to an end when another person takes over the business, or if a buyer cannot be found, when the liquidation ends, or they cease to carry on the business at the landfill site. Let's have a look at the returns that need to be made for landfill tax purposes. Returns are made for accounting periods, and an accounting period is defined in Regulation 2 of the Landfill Tax Regulations. Just like VAT, IPT and a few other taxes, they are 3 months in length. The return must be made by the end of the month following the period to which it relates. So, in our example, the return must be in by the end of April. In order to be able to complete the return, the operator must keep a landfill tax account. This will be a quarterly summary of total landfill tax due, detailing any credits of tax and any adjustments that need to be made. What if we make an error on a return? Well, if an operator discovers that he has made an error on a previous return, then, subject to some rules, he can make the correction on a subsequent return without having to separately declare it to customs. If he has made an over-declaration of tax, for example, he has paid too much tax by overstating the tax due, or under-declaring the amount of any credit he is entitled to, then there is no limit to the amount of the error that can be entered on the next return. You can see this in Regulation 13 of the Landfill Tax Regulations. The reason that there is no limit is because the error has been to customs' benefit, so they are quite happy that they have had your money interest-free. If, however, you have made an under-declaration, i.e., you have paid less landfill tax than you should have done, then customs are not going to be quite as happy. Therefore, the maximum that you can adjust on the return is the greater of £10,000 or 1% of turnover, subject to a maximum of £50,000. If the error exceeds the limit, this needs to be separately notified to customs. Once we are happy with our return, then payment of the tax is also required by the same deadline for sending in our return. Now we'll look at record keeping. What records need to be kept in case customs want to check that we are accounting for the correct amount of tax? Record keeping is covered in Regulation 16 of our Landfill Tax Regulations. The types of records include business and accounts. These must also include the landfill tax account, which, remember, is our quarterly summary of tax that is due, including any credits or adjustments that have to be made. An operator also needs to keep transfer notes or other records that show material brought onto the site and any material removed from the site. Invoices issued also need to be kept, and any credit or debit notes. Most records should be kept for a minimum of 6 years, just like for VAT and a lot of other indirect taxes that we've looked at. We'll now take a look at the case of Waste Recycling Group and Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. HMRC appealed against the decision of the High Court, and the decision of the Court of Appeal has only just been released. In essence, the Court of Appeal has concurred with the taxpayer, and mostly therefore the decision of the High Court, that landfill tax is not due where material is used to cover waste at the end of each day, and material is used for engineering at a landfill site, e.g. for road building. The disposal, if indeed there was one at all, was made by the landfill site operator himself, on his own behalf. Therefore, it was his intention that was relevant. He did not discard the material, i.e. this means rejecting or abandoning it, he was retaining the material to use. Just because the original producer might throw the material away, there is no principle that once something is waste, it will always be waste. The judge dismissed HMRC's appeal, but varied the order of the High Court, which remitted disposals back to the tribunal for reconsideration. You can listen to the facts and circumstances of the Waste Recycling Group case in a separate lecture on this CD. But remember, now that we have the decision of the Court of Appeal, there is to be no remission back to the tribunal. The taxpayer has won. That material used to cover the waste at the end of the day, and material used for site engineering purposes such as road buildings, is not discarded as waste. It is the landfill site operator's intention that is relevant, and if he does not intend to discard the material as waste, landfill tax will not be due. However, don't forget that as a result of this case, the legislation was changed to make daily cover and uses of materials in temporary structures deemed disposals and liable to landfill tax.